The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news. Where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Have a live link to thetrumpet.com as well. And we're on YouTube live this morning, and I think a few other places too, so thanks for joining us. I'm Dwight Falk, filling in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. He's at a conference here for a few days, and so a few guest hosts, including myself today, so I'm glad that you're with us today. Of course, today is December 25th, so that is traditionally kept as Christmas by many people. And I'm not going to talk much about it. Actually, there was a tremendous Key of David program that the audio played right before we came on the air here with this program. And it goes into a lot of important details about Christmas. And I think that's a great program to go back and watch and listen to also if you listen to the audio. And the video is online at thetrumpet.com. We also have some great literature that talks about the Christmas holiday at thetrumpet.com as well as featured now because it's relevant for this time of the year. So great to get back into that and study some of that. And there are a lot of people that if they haven't looked into it before would really be surprised to find out some of the history of Christmas, where that comes from, and really also what God's holy days are. And so both of those books, the one is called The Truth About Christmas, and the other one is called Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which they're featured there at thetrumpet.com. So you can check those out if you'd like to do that. I couldn't help but notice at the top of the hour the news that we play, feature story news. And they, of course, they talk about COVID. COVID was the big story of the year, I guess. And they noted that it was a pandemic, and it caused 2 million deaths. Now, if you stop and you think, wow, 2 million, I mean, that's a lot of deaths. Now, are those numbers accurate? I'm not sure because people die of all sorts of things and then they may have COVID, so they say it was a COVID death. I don't know if COVID was the cause. 2 million people died of COVID globally. Okay, but let's put that in perspective. And this wasn't even in my notes, but I just heard that story and I had to pull up some data. This is from 2017, so this is a few years back. The causes of death globally. 18 million people die per year of cardiovascular disease in the world. 18 million people, heart disease, other problems like that. Something in the cardiovascular realm. 10 million people died of cancer. 4 million people died of respiratory diseases. And then you go down even further, and digestive diseases killed over 2 million people. Diarrhea killed 2 million people. So when you're talking about death and what causes death globally, there's a lot of people in the world. A lot of people die, and they die from a variety of diseases and other issues. Dementia kills close to 2 million people. And so when they talk about COVID and they make it out like, you know, this is something that, you know, has never been dealt with before, it's not even in the top, you know, few causes of death by a long shot. But you would think that this has got to grind the world to an absolute halt. This has definitely been the year of COVID-19. There's a quote here of some headlines that were sent over. Dr. William Haseline said on MSNBC yesterday that coronavirus will be, quote, a decades-long battle. So we're going to be fighting COVID for decades and decades. And so when you stop and think about that, we went from what was a 15 days to slow the spread. That's what originally was presented to us. 15 days to slow the spread. They said, look, you've got to lock yourself down. You can't go to work. You can't see your family. You got to hole up in your apartment or wherever. But look, it's only for 15 days. We can manage that, you know, and we have to do it for the good of everybody. And now we're talking about decades. Decades. And it just makes me think of the old story, right, of the frog you put in the pot of boiling water, and you slowly turn up the temperature before the frog knows that he's completely cooked. We're getting cooked. Cooked by COVID. Cooked by the ideology of it. they're trying to reshape the entire world. COVID is being used to reshape the world and change people's lives. And, you know, if you just go back a few months, and I think it's important to do it, go back and think about what was said originally to us. And then think about what's being said today and how slowly, step by step, people are accepting more and more lockdowns, more and more freedoms being taken. Well, we have to do it. You know, you've been out there, same as I have. You try to go into a store, and if you don't have a mask on, you know, people look at you like you're walking in with the bubonic plague or something like that. And again, everyone's terrified, and there's headlines all the time. I'll just pull it up here. I just saw it a second ago, but it was the Drudge Report, which they've definitely become much more of a liberal talking website than anything else lately. But their headlines today, I mean, it's terrifying, right? Dark days, mutant strains everywhere, more deaths, mutant strains everywhere. I mean, people are terrified. CNN ran a headline yesterday saying that somebody showed up sick, which you shouldn't do. If you're sick, you should quarantine. But they showed up sick and they're responsible possibly for seven deaths. I don't know if they're, I read the story, I couldn't exactly find that they were the cause of seven deaths, but the point is they're trying to terrify everyone, and again, if you're sick, you shouldn't go anywhere, you should quarantine, but they're not talking about that, they're talking about you being locked down, and again, COVID being used to reshape the world. This is going to be a decades-long battle. Joe Biden said that when he comes into office, which we know won't happen, but he thinks he will. He said when he comes in, COVID's going to be priority 1, 2, and 3. That's it? 1, 2, and 3. COVID, that's the biggest thing ever. The biggest thing ever. 2 million deaths globally, maybe. And that doesn't even crack the top probably 10 causes of death, or at least it's not up very high. Talk about craziness when it comes to COVID. This story just caught my attention the other day. You may have seen this. There was an NFL player photographed with multiple strippers. He was photographed with multiple strippers. It came out in the media. People were outraged. He had to apologize publicly. Do you know why people were outraged? Because the NFL player was not wearing a mask. They weren't outraged that he was with multiple strippers. He just wasn't wearing a mask. The hypocrisy, the stupidity of it is unbelievable. Wouldn't be that long ago where the shame in that would be because he was doing some morally reprehensible activities. Now, that doesn't matter. He didn't wear a mask when he was doing his morally reprehensive activities. So that's just the world we live in. And again, how many people are even, well, first of all, really seeing what's happening with COVID? The Trumpets talked about it a lot. The Trumpet Daily's talked about it. The Key of David's talked about it. But how many people are also going back to China and holding China to account, even for the beginning of this? It's really something to think about. I wanted to mention just the Trumpet brief from December 23rd, a few days ago. And if you're not a subscriber to that, please sign up for it. It's a free Trumpet brief, comes every day to your email inbox, and it gets you focused on the headlines and what's happening in the world. It says, headlines regarding China's infiltration into America, even its malign influence on the recent presidential election, are emerging daily. They're very involved. You want to talk about reshaping the world? China is very involved in that. They'd like to reshape the world and do it according to their thinking. And this Trumpet brief continues talking about the new Trumpet print edition. It says, our newest Trumpet print edition tackles this explosive subject and gives a biblical perspective on this nation's goal for world domination. They have a goal for world domination. They're not, you know, just minding their own business. They have a goal for world domination. And COVID has definitely played a part in that. I don't know exactly how it all relates, but certainly there is. It's been very effective for them, whatever their original intention was. But it says, our cover story, Wake Up to the Threat from China, shows the progress China has made in realizing its ambition. There's a lot that they've done, and they've done it over the years. And if you're looking at the live stream, you can see the new Trumpet magazine. You can click on it right now. You can read those articles. Certainly sign up for the print edition to be delivered to you as well, because it's wonderful to have that. But it talks about Mr. Gerald Fleury's major feature, China's most dangerous maneuver ever against America. It says it is a reminder of a pivotal strategic turn in China's favor that most people have forgotten. Yet it is all the more relevant in light of recent revelations of China's intentions. And if you listen to the Trumpet Hour this week, you heard more about that. And there's a lot that Mr. Fleury has been writing about what China's been involved in. It goes on to talk about some of the other articles in there. Australia, a warning to the world. China's heavily involved with Australia. They've done a lot there to take really control of Australia. And it's a warning for what can happen to the rest of the world. Another article, Chinese cartels have infiltrated Mexico. Another one, the biggest threat to American democracy. And then there's more even there about e-voting and so forth. So there's a lot that is focused in this newest edition on China and what China's doing. And so I saw a story the other day, too, even where they said that in Wuhan, where this COVID, I guess, it came from, that most people have gotten back to, life is normal. And again, it was one article, so I didn't do a lot of research into it. But they're kind of moving on, at least to some extent, and we're going to have a decades-long battle with masks, apparently, and other things here in the United States. So it's certainly been very effective for China to slow down the world in many, many ways. Well, 2020 was quite a year, of course, COVID, as we talked about there a little bit. But another big issue, and I wanted to talk about this briefly, is the racial issues here in the United States. This caught my attention because I was thinking about the things that happened this year and what a dramatic year it's been. And it's easy to kind of move on because so much is happening day to day. But you think back to the summer and you think back to the rioting and the protesting that was going on across the country. There was protests and riots here in Oklahoma City even. And, we all watched this nationally unfold. And so CNN talked about this a little bit. And, of course, they're really pushing for, I'll just read the headline. It says, 2020, the year America confronted racism. Did America confronted racism? That's how they would like to portray this. And the article is by Nicole Chavez. She says, no matter where you turned, you couldn't ignore reality. America was the epicenter of a racial reckoning. And reckoning means a bill or account or its settlement. So there's a settlement that we've got to settle the score here. We've got to settle the score when it comes to race issues in the United States. The author thinks this past year was the time for America to count up the cost of racism and, I guess, settle the score to some extent. Make it a talking point at least, and then get out in the streets, as we saw. And then she goes through some of the big events of the year. So the point of the article was to kind of go through month by month big events in the race relations in the U.S. And the stories were big, I guess, to some extent, but mostly they were big because the media fanned the flames. Some of the things were probably a little more prominent, but others I don't think I would have even known about if they hadn't have really dug up the headlines on these things. So here are some of the examples, some of the headlines that they brought up. Again, this is CNN talking about race relations in the U.S. for 2020. The first headline early in the year was COVID-19 outbreak fuels racist attacks against Asian people. So this is what they say. I'm not familiar with anything like that happening. I'm sure maybe somewhere something was said, but it wasn't a big issue, at least in terms of, I think, what most people were dealing with. They just really wanted to highlight that there was racism within COVID, which really, I think, just gets people going in a wrong direction. Another headline says COVID-19 pandemic disproportionately impacts people of color. Then they got into the death of George Floyd and the protest riots. And now, again, they said they were mostly peaceful protests. And, of course, within all of that, then the rise of Black Lives Matter. So everything that happened, they're trying to really push it back towards race. And the rise of Black Lives Matter. There's a headline or a story that was sent to me today, too, talking about this over in the UK. And the headline says, English football, soccer, as we would call it, aim to re-educate fans who boo Black Lives Matter. So there was a group of fans at a Cambridge United match they booed the players as they knelt down for, I guess, Black Lives Matter. They knelt down. The fans didn't like it. The fans booed. And so Cambridge is launching an investigation into the booing fans. You're not allowed to boo. You can't boo. Can't show your disapproval. You can boo a team, you can boo a player, but you can't boo this. This can't be booed. The CEO of the club, Ian Mather, said each case has been looked at separately. So they're really doing investigation into why people were booing Black Lives Matter. I have a pretty good idea why they were booing it. They don't like it because it's causing problems. It's stirring up divisions and causing all kinds of difficulties. But they had to investigate. Why? Why would these people boo this? And the CEO of the club said, each case has been looked at separately. Conclusions reached ranged from education and support without any ban through to bans to the end of the season with season tickets refunded. So depending on your level of booing, apparently, and I don't know exactly how they determine that. It's funny to even talk about this. Like, what level of booing did you engage in? You know, maybe you just need, as they say, to be re-educated. Oh, we'll re-educate you. Or, you know, if you were really booing, I guess, then maybe you'd be banned for the rest of the year. So, again, so much of a forced worship of this movement. So much just people being forced. They're allowed to not agree with this protest if they want to, but not according to these some of these sports teams. We saw that here in the United States. NBA players were doing that. They were kneeling. They were wearing their social justice slogans on their jerseys. And the NBA realized quite quickly people didn't like that, so they don't do that this year anymore. There's no more of that on the courts. And so people again, not supportive of this like the media is trying to push them to be. Of course, the Washington Redskins football team, they changed their name. They're now the Washington Football Club or team or something. I can't remember. And so all of these things are being highlighted by CNN as events that happen racially in the U.S. And just taking a step back from that, my question would be this. All of those things that happened, all of the things that they did, all the social justice movements, all of the initiatives, what did it accomplish? What did it accomplish? Did they identify a problem and then did they solve it effectively? I mean, let's take a step back. Yeah, a lot was done, a lot was said, but what did it do? What did it accomplish? Proverbs 14:12, this is a very familiar passage. It says, there is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. There's a way that seems right unto a man. It seems like a good idea. It seems like, well, maybe this is how we solve problems. But how does it end? Well, it says it ends in death. Now, so what did we see in these riots in the summer and all this racial reckoning? We saw a lot of people in the streets saying what should be done. You should do this, you should do that, you should do the other. And then also people dying in the streets. People dying, businesses being burned, looted, destruction. You know, you look at some of the footage from, I think it was Kenosha. It looks like a bomb went off. I mean, they just burned places to the ground. People didn't have anything to do with anything they were protesting. But, well, just burn it to the ground. Burn it to the ground. There's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And we saw that on display. You have to really stop and just consider that principle when you're looking at what people are trying to do. They want some sort of social change. It seems right to them. Maybe this is the way we should do it. We should take to the streets. We should burn buildings down. We should attack people. But how does it end? It ends in death. And that's what we saw. And of course, the Bible prophesies there's more of that coming. So what should we do? You know, what is the answer? Is the answer to defund the police? Is the answer to change all the sports teams' names? If we change all the sports teams' names, then there'll never be a racial problem. Should we just bow down to communist movements? Is that the way to solve these problems? That seems right to some people, but it ends in the way of death. Hosea 13 makes this point. Hosea 13, verses 9 through 10, it says, O Israel, and this is talking about the modern nations today, the United States and over there in Britain, and of course other nations as well, but primarily those two. It says, Oh, Israel, you have destroyed yourself. You have destroyed yourself. If you stop and you think about COVID-19 and you think about and the reaction to it and these protests in the streets and people trying to solve things their own way, God says, well, you've just destroyed yourself. You destroyed your own economy.
Of course, that's been going on for years, but I mean specifically with some of these lockdowns here recently. We're destroying ourselves in our own cities. And he makes that point as it goes further. It says, but in me, in God, is your help. If you want to solve this, forget about the way that seems right to man. Look to God for help. Verse 10 says, I will be your king. Where is any other that may save you in all your cities? That's a pretty specific question there. The rioting in the cities, the burning in the cities that we saw. Who's going to save? Who's going to save people in their cities? In Israel, in America, in Britain. God says he has to do it. He has to do it. It has to be his government. It has to be his leadership. It has to be his law. There's a way that seems right to a man, but it ends in death. Only God can save us in our cities. We want to solve whatever problems that there are, and there are problems. The only solution is God's word, God's principles. Has Black Lives Matter saved anything? Have they improved anything? Here's a headline from Fox News. Detroit, the city of Detroit is suing Black Lives Matter activists for civil conspiracy. They're even sick of it. They're sick of the things that have been done in their cities. It says the city alleges that injuries to police officers have included cracked vertebrae, lacerations, and concussions. The police were attacked. They were attacked. They're suing these activists, the city of Detroit. It says Detroit has filed a lawsuit against Black Lives Matter activists, alleging a civil conspiracy and claiming the protests in the city have repeatedly turned violent. Yes, they have. We saw it. We saw it happen. They repeatedly turned violent, endangering the lives of police and the public. Of course they did. That's what they were out there to do. Instigate. Cause trouble. I mean, I watched it unfold just even here locally. We were watching some of the news coverage again back in the summer, and they were having these protests down Oklahoma City. Thankfully, not as bad as some cities, but it still happened at least one night. And it was the same sort of thing. They had the helicopter showing the scene from up top so you could see everything that was happening. And of course, the news people, I guess, get kind of excited about that sort of thing. But so you'd have the protesters, you have a police line, you know, saying, look, you're not going to come past here. You can protest over there, but don't come here and cause trouble at the police precinct, because they wanted to destroy the police building. And so the people would walk up and they'd start throwing rocks and start causing trouble. And eventually the police would have to shoot pepper spray or something into the audience, or not the audience, but the protesters. And the protesters would run away screaming and crying, and the media would get up there and say, what did they do? And they're shooting at us. You know, it's just anybody with any common sense knows. They're not going to just randomly shoot pepper spray at you, which, by the way, doesn't kill you. It's an irritant for sure. But you just have to stop trying to burn down the police building. But they just kept pushing it and pushing it. The police would push back a little bit, very minor. And they'd cry and they'd scream and go into, you know, all sorts of convulsions, literally and emotionally and physically, and just be so upset about how cruel the police were. But Detroit, they had even more problems, and they're sick of it. And they're suing because these people are instigating. They're causing trouble. It says the repeated violence, this is from Fox, the repeated violence should negate Black Lives Matter protests. A group, Detroit Will Breathes, that's the name of the group, claims that the demonstrations should be protected under First Amendment. They want their demonstrations protected. And so the police chief came out and said, look, you can protest all you want to, but you can't resist arrest. You can't attack the officers. And if you do that, we are going to use reasonable force to overcome the resistance. Of course they're going to. So you have one side saying, look, we have a First Amendment right to protest. The police chief said, that's fine. You can protest all you want to, but you can't come and attack the police officers. If you do that, we will push back. And of course they will. And they should. But it just shows you there's a way that seems right to man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The end, it's the ways of death. And that's what we saw this year. Was it a racial reckoning in the United States? Well, there was trouble, that's for sure. Were any problems solved? Not that I saw. I didn't see any problems solved. I saw more problems created. Ezekiel 33 and verse 11, notice what God says here. And this is God's attitude towards Israel and what he wants for us. He says, "Say unto them, as I live, says the eternal God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn you from your evil ways. Why will you die, O house of Israel?" Remember how God said we're destroying ourselves? We're destroying ourselves through all of this. And he says, look, why will you die? Why will you do that? I don't want that for you, but I want you to turn from your evil ways and live. Turn from attacking each other in your cities. Turn from that and live. I mean, race problems and all these other problems, they're going to be solved, but they'll be solved when people begin to listen to what God says. When they begin to listen to God's solutions, that's when problems get solved. And I really like this. This is Ezekiel 33 and verse 17. It says, "The children of my people say, the way of the eternal is not equal. But as for them, their way is not equal." I love that. Because people can say, well, things aren't fair. It's not equal. God says, your way is not equal. Your way isn't equal. You know, for people protesting, say, for inequality, are they living a life full of perfect equality? Are they treating everybody fairly? Are they obeying God's laws? Well, certainly they're not. God calls them out on it. He says, you say, my way is not equal. Your way is not equal. Verse 20, "Yet you say the way of the Lord is not equal. O you house of Israel, I will judge you every one after his ways." That's what it comes down to. People can argue about equality, what's fair, what's not fair. But God says, look, I'm going to judge everybody after their ways. Everybody's going to be judged after their ways. There was a lot of problems in 2020 when it comes to race relations. But until we look to God and his solutions, we are not going to solve them. There is a way that seems right unto a man, and they tried it, but it ends in death. We'll take a quick break and be back right after this. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3 KPCG.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG is produced by the Philadelphia Church of God. The Philadelphia Church of God offers a library of free educational literature, including Mystery of the Ages by Herbert W. Armstrong. Mystery of the Ages serves as a synopsis of the Holy Bible. It addresses basic questions about the nature of God, the existence of spirit beings, the purpose of mankind, the history of civilization, the purpose of Israel, the purpose of the church, and the nature of the kingdom of God. More information is available at mysteryoftheages.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3 KPCG. We were laughing here with David Vigil and my son Spencer Falk, who came in to help with the show this morning. You know, when we get a break in there, we always, you know, it gives you a chance to kind of, you know, recalibrate your notes and everything. And they said, oh, sorry, we only gave you a 30-second break this time. So I was hoping for a little bit more, but 30, you know, hey, got to do what you got to do. They do a great job. I don't want to in any way say that they're not doing a great job, because they are. But maybe that's all I needed. Maybe I just needed a 30-second break. I think I said 30-second, right? Maybe I said 30-minute. 30-second break. So anyway, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We weren't gone too long. We're right back with you. And so we were talking a little bit about what's happened in 2020, especially with some of the race issues. Again, it's just, you know, people have tried to solve things and they haven't been solved. But 2020, I mean, really, it's been an incredible year, a shocking year. Many, many things have happened. I think Sam Livingston covered some of the major events, and it's easy to forget how many things occurred in 2020. I mean, so much has happened. As we talked about a little bit, COVID-19, that's been a big issue. The presidential election, of course, in the U.S., it's dominated the headlines here recently. And in all of this, it leads to the fact that many people are on edge. Many people are nervous, concerned, and rightfully so, about the direction of the United States and really the world. People are disturbed. They're unsettled by the events of this year. Some people may be ignoring it, I guess, if they can. But really, it's hard to ignore because it's impacting everybody. So people are very disturbed. There's a study that came from Science Daily reported on it, talking about COVID-19. And they think that just the lockdowns and everything that's happened, it's actually tripled the depression rate. They say a first-of-its-kind study from the Boston University School of Public Health finds 27.8% of the U.S. adults had depression symptoms as of mid-April, compared to 8.5% before the COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, you lock somebody in their room and they can't see their friends and they can't go out and do anything. It's solitary confinement. Now, maybe they have some entertainments, but it's still solitary confinement, and so people are depressed. And the survey found, of course, a lot of the depression had to do with depending on how much money a person had. If people had some savings and they could kind of weather the storm, they felt not as bad. If they were broke, they were more depressed, as you would expect. People are really struggling with the COVID situation. And when I say COVID situation, I mean mainly man's attempts to deal with it. People are also unnerved by the U.S. presidential election. Northeastern.edu reports more than half of Republican voters either believe President Donald Trump actually won the 2020 race. I think many people believe that because I believe he did. Or aren't entirely sure who did win, according to a new survey by researchers from Northeastern, Harvard, Northwestern, and Rutgers. So people are very much concerned about the things that have happened in this year and the things that are to come. So how about you? How about me? I mean, are we worried? Are we pretty nervous? Are we pretty anxious about things and where they're heading in the world? Many people are. Are we depressed? As has been reported very thoroughly on this program and at thetrumpet.com, some people are scheming and planning to benefit from corruption. There is a lot to be concerned about there. And they are, you know, again, even as I read earlier, the COVID lockdowns is being used to reshape the world in a lot of ways. But there's something that we have to keep at the forefront of our minds when we think about all the problems that we've seen and the things that we will see. And that is simply this, that the great God rules in the kingdom of men. Man has all kinds of ideas. You know, there's a way, like we talked about in the beginning, that seems right unto a man, and people try all kinds of things, but God rules ultimately. That's where we can take comfort, is that God rules. Notice this in Psalm 2. Psalm 2, verses 1 through 4, this really puts everything into a great perspective for us. Psalm 2, starting there, I think it's in verse 1, says, "Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing?" Well, you can see that happening today, right? People are raging and imagining a vain thing and trying to get power and trying to manipulate. It says, "The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the eternal and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder, cast away their cords from us." We're going to take power. We're going to do things the way we want to. We've got these plans. We've got these schemes, and we're going to do it. And then God comes into the picture. Verse 4, it says, "He that sits in the heavens shall laugh. The eternal shall have them in derision." See, God is not caught off guard by events. God's not surprised by what man's doing. People of the world can make their plans. Rulers can make their schemes and say, well, we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll do the other. And God says, you know what? I'll do what I want because God rules. Now, he'll allow certain things and work out his plan in a variety of ways. But look, verse 4 there, as we read, "He that sits in the heavens shall laugh. The eternal shall have them in derision." Man can plan and scheme and do whatever they want to, but God rules in the kingdom of men. He rules in the kingdom of men, and we have to remember that. We need to take comfort in that God rules. Some of the greatest physical rulers on this earth have understood this truth. at least on a certain level, and they gained comfort from it. Winston Churchill, prime example. In an address before the U.S. Congress on December 26, 1941, the British Prime Minister asserted that, quote, "He must indeed have a blind soul who cannot see that some great purpose and design is being worked out here below." Winston Churchill said that. He watched events, major events, events there in World War II. And he said, look, you'd have to be blind. You'd have to be blind to not see that God's working things out here. There's a great purpose and design being worked out. At another time, Winston Churchill said, "I sometimes have a feeling of interference. I have a feeling sometimes that some guiding hand has interfered." And again, this isn't just, you know, some guy doing small things in the world. This is Winston Churchill. He was there leading and directing at the forefront of World War II. The fate of the world was in the balance. And he said, look, I feel sometimes there's this interference here. There's a guiding hand. There's a guiding hand. He knew that. He could see that. You can think about the miracles that happened in World War II, and we're going to talk about those in a little bit. Benjamin Franklin, now, he understood this as well. He was speaking at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. In June 1787, Franklin asserted this, quote, "The longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice," and he was referencing Matthew 10 and verse 29 there, he says, "Is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?" I mean, that's amazing. What an amazing insight from Benjamin Franklin. Well, he read the Bible. At least he read Matthew 10. He read the Bible. He thought about things. He had seen things. He had witnessed things. And what a great point he makes. Look, if a sparrow, as he says, cannot fall to the ground without his notice, without God knowing that that little bird fell to the ground, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? Do we really think that COVID-19 could shake the world and God didn't know about it and didn't have, you know, a plan that he's allowing and working? Do we think that, you know, there can be all of this controversy in the U.S. presidential election and God doesn't know about it and isn't setting things up a certain way? You know, he works in different ways and does different things according to his will, but he gives prophecies, and those prophecies come to pass. God cannot lie. And Mr. Gerald Fleury's recent Trumpet article about the presidential election is a must-read. You want to talk about, you know, faith in God's promises and in his prophecies, you read that article. Do we really think that God is not deeply, deeply involved in what happens in this world? That's where we take our comfort from, the fact that God is deeply involved in our lives, in knowing about the sparrows, in knowing about empires, and ruling and making sure that things happen according to his plan. We have a video that I want to play here in just a second. It's a little bit longer. I think it's about 12 minutes. This was made a few years back. It just highlights some of the miracles involved, some of the things God did in the forming of the British Empire. And I think it'll just be good to remember. I was going to just read some of the history, and I thought, well, it'd be more interesting to watch the video on it, I think. It was made a few years ago, and so I think there might even be a few references to things from that were more relevant a year or two ago. But nevertheless, the main history flow of what God did and the miracles that he worked, I think, should really be inspiring to us to see, again, God rules in the kingdom of men. So if we could go ahead and play that video now.
No nation outside of ancient Israel has experienced more cases of divine intervention than Great Britain. Just try to find one. And not just little everyday miracles either, although there have been plenty of those too, but history-altering events. events that have no explanation but that of divine intervention, miracles without which the nation would have ceased to exist. Britain is turning its back on those miracles. Its people have forgotten, and its politicians are signing away the sovereignty of a nation that is only independent and free today because of those many miracles. Remember the Invincible Armada. 1588. Only England stood in the way of Philip of Spain and his domination of Europe and the New World. The Spanish Armada was termed invincible for a reason. It was the most powerful military force in the world. Philip had 149 ships of the line. Britain had 80 ships total, of which 50 were volunteer vessels and some not much bigger than yachts. Even of the Queen's 30 warships, only four were equal in tonnage to the smallest Spanish galleons. Against these overwhelming odds, the British fleet desperately engaged the Spaniards in an attempt to prevent a landing on the English coast. During the first major engagement at Calais, with the tide and wind in its favor, the British fleet performed amazingly. Three Spanish galleons sank, and three others helplessly grounded on the French coast. The victory, however, came at a cost. The bulk of the Spanish fleet remained intact, and the British were out of ammunition. The Brits had to return home for reinforcements. The English Channel was clear for the Spanish attack. But the channel crossing and attack did not come. Just 6 measly kilometers separated Britain from the Spanish invasion. But a work of destruction came from a force far greater than Britain's navy. Severe wind and storm suddenly materialized, scattering and wrecking the Spanish ships. By the time the retreating Spaniards made it back to Spain, only 50 ships carrying a few thousand sick and disease-stricken men remained. The Spanish threat to Britain was over, and so was Spain's era as a global power. Remember Quiberon Bay, 1759. The French fleet was marshaled to invade England, and the British fleet again was forced to sail to its defense. The battle began, and again a heavy gale erupted. Some French ships were driven onto the shoals, others were sunk and captured, and the French navy was massively defeated. Britain was saved once more. Remember Napoleon. 15 million Britons must give way to 40 millions, Napoleon uttered in frustration. He assembled a massive fleet of transports and an army of 100,000 soldiers at Boulogne. Over 100,000 troops were readied elsewhere. Let us be masters of the channel for 6 hours, and we are masters of the world, he declared. But the date of the invasion was delayed by the death of the admiral chosen to lead it, postponing departure just enough so that on October 21st, 1805, Nelson gained his astounding naval victory at Trafalgar against staggering odds, utterly shattering Napoleon's plans for invasion. Remember Waterloo. Author Victor Hugo observed that the shadow of a mighty right hand is cast over Waterloo. It is the day of destiny, and the force which is above man produced that day. If it had not rained the night between the 17th and 18th of June, noted Hugo, the future of Europe would have been changed. A little rain during the time when rain was not expected, and an empire was overthrown. Remember the miraculous appearance of the White Cavalry at Mons in 1918 that turned a rout into a victory. Remember the National Days of Prayer on August 4th, 1918 and May 26th, 1940, during the times of Britain's greatest need. Remember the miracle at Dunkirk and how, after a National Day of Prayer invoked by King George VI, the impossible happened. Surrounded and trapped between the Channel and German troops, the retreating Allies prepared to be slaughtered. Meanwhile, Hitler commanded his panzer tank divisions to hold off so that the Luftwaffe could have the honor of attacking the withdrawing Brits. But again, intervening weather, including violent rain and wind, grounded the German Air Force, while wondrously leaving the channel calm until the evacuation was complete. The water, uncannily smooth, allowed even small motorboats to rescue stranded soldiers. In Winston Churchill's words, 335,000 British troops were delivered out of the jaws of death and shame. Remember Operation Sea Lion and how, when Britain had an army without arms, it was protected from invasion. Remember the Battle of Britain and how Hitler boasted he would erase British cities. More than 1,000 German bombers and fighters pounded London during one night alone. The Royal Air Force was outnumbered by more than 2-1, yet shot down more German planes. Remember the sinking of the Bismarck. Remember how Britain received its most bountiful harvests in 1942, when it faced shortages due to wartime interference with its offshore supply lines. R.S. Hudson, the Minister of Agriculture, said, "Some power has wrought a miracle in the English harvest fields this summer, for in this, our year of greatest need, the land has given us bread in greater abundance than we have ever known before." Remember the epic defense of Malta, Britain's military base in the Mediterranean, and how that tiny island nation survived 2,000 bombing attacks over 2 years, holding out against all Europe and enabling the defeat of Rommel's Desert Corps in the process. Remember the miracle at El Alamein in Egypt, a time when, according to historian W.B. Grant, all Islam and Christendom held its breath. Churchill called the last-ditch stand at El Alamein a moment in the presence of a recession of our hopes and prospects in the Middle East and in the Mediterranean unequaled since the fall of France. But Rommel stopped just a few miles from defenseless Alexandria. Why? His water and fuel had run out. Had he reached El Alamein 2 days later, he would have found a completed water pipeline filled with fresh water. Instead, he found the newly constructed water pipeline being tested with salt water. His men died of thirst. "Before El Alamein, we never had a victory," said Churchill. "After El Alamein, we never had a defeat." Remember the miracle of D-Day and how, at the last possible moment during the windiest month in Normandy for 20 years, a break in the weather occurred that allowed the Allies to launch the invasion of Europe. And how, against fierce opposition, General Eisenhower took the risk. Had he delayed, as he was vehemently encouraged to do, the next launch window would have been June 18th. June 18th began as a beautiful, calm day, but ended in a storm so fierce that the invasion could have easily been wrecked. Because of the predicted stormy weather on D-Day, the Germans were caught off guard. "This day, 8 years ago, I made the most agonizing decision of my life," Eisenhower later recalled. "If there were nothing else in my life to prove the existence of an almighty and merciful God, the events of the next 24 hours did it." The greatest break in a terrible outlay of weather occurred the next day and allowed that great invasion to proceed with losses far below those we had anticipated. There is much to remember. No modern nation has had as many life-preserving miracles as Great Britain. British history is filled with irrefutable examples of God-given deliverance and preservation. It should be so clear that even the blind can't help but see. Yet today, British politicians turn their back on that history and the countless miracles that have preserved their nation's freedom. Britain, instead of looking to the God who miraculously ensured its freedom so many times throughout history, is looking to Europe for safety and security. There was a time that Britons recognized the source of those miracles and sought to obey their author. Churchill believed that. Montgomery and Eisenhower believed it. The Sunday Times in 1945 believed it, as did the Daily Sketch in 1946 and the Daily Telegraph in 1947. So did untold thousands of British soldiers who experienced the miracles firsthand. The Telegraph wrote on April 7, 1947, "And miracles happen still. How many of them have we not seen enacted before our very eyes in these past few years? The history of them is now in the writing." Wake up, Britain. Remember your history. Britain's entire history, from Boudicca to the Battle for the Falklands, is peppered with such miracles. Remember the Battle of Agincourt, where 6,000 defeated 30,000. Remember the Battle of Rorke's Drift, when 200 stood against 5,000. Remember the Battle of Assaye, and how 6,500 routed 40,000. Remember the list that goes on and on.
So I thought that was a pretty pretty good video there, and some great history. And again, I was going to read some of it, and I think that was a much more a dramatic way and a better way to show some of those miracles that have happened. But again, the whole point is, look, the British Empire rose, and God wasn't surprised by it. In fact, he made it rise to fulfill his promises to Abraham. And so when we think about those miracles and we remember that history, and we should, God tells us to remember our history, remember what he's done for us and for our nations, and just remember the fact that God rules. He does rule, and his plan comes to pass. That should give us hope. We shouldn't be depressed and anxious and discouraged. I mean, there are serious times, and we have to be sober-minded, of course. But at the same time, God is fulfilling his purpose, and he's fulfilling his plan. Notice Isaiah 46 and verse 10. It says, "Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, My counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure." So when we look at events of the past year, whether it be COVID-19 or the stealing of a presidential election or an attempt to do so, or we look at race riots and we look at all of these problems, we have to understand that God's will stand. None of these events catch him off guard. He's fully aware and working out a plan, and he's going to see that all the things that he has prophesied come to pass. As he says there, "My counsel shall stand. I will do all my pleasure." People run around and try to do different things, but God is in control. There's an encouraging admonition here in Psalm 27 and verse 14 to be reminded of, as again, as we should be working to not be stressed, not be anxious, not be worried, not be concerned, not be depressed like so many people are when they see problems occurring. And there are real problems. But notice this. In Psalm 27 and verse 14, it says, "Wait on the Eternal, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Eternal." Sometimes we don't know how a situation will work out. That could be in our lives personally, or it could be in the national scale or global scale. Wait on the Eternal. Of course, we watch and we pray. We do pay attention to what's happening and going on in the world, and we do study into God's prophecies, but we wait on the Eternal to work things out. And be of good courage, he says. Be of courage. He'll take care of it. He'll work it out. And the leaders that led in World War II, you know, they understood that. Winston Churchill understood that. Before him, Benjamin Franklin understood that to a point. That God's working things out. So when we see troubles, and we will see troubles, remember this admonition. Be of good courage. Wait on the Eternal. That's all the time we have for today on this version, edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure that you check out thetrumpet.com for top headlines today. Thanks for spending some time with me today, and we'll see you on Monday.